What's up, guys? Welcome back to another NRL Hunter podcast brought to you by Six Hour, our title sponsor of the NRL Hunter series. I am here with a good buddy of mine, Justin Gray. Justin, what is up, sir? How are you?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Oh, man. No, I appreciate you. I appreciate your patience. I know we were trying to do this a couple of weeks ago and my schedule got stupid. So I appreciate your patience and making it happen today.
No worries. Anytime. You know, my schedule's, wouldn't say open, but you know, you tell me jump, I say how high, so let's do it.
No, I appreciate your flexibility, bro. It's awesome. All right, so as I like to do with all of the podcasts, I want people to know who you are and a little bit about you. So can you give us a quick breakdown?
Sure, no problem. Yeah, my name is Justin, Justin Gray. I guess you can say I was prior military, retired out medically, got hurt while I was in and kind of separated me out of the military, but hey, no regrets. I'm out. It's pretty relaxing, I'm not gonna lie. I think I have less gray hair in my head now than I did before. But now I shoot competition rifle matches, preferably field matches. Originally started shooting rifle matches back in 2016 with Competition Dynamics, the Steel Safari, Team Safari, and then I saw that you came up with the NRL Hunter, so that was even better. Loved it. You know, I still love it to this day. You know, I shoot it religiously. And now it's pretty much all I do. I'm a contractor for the military right now. And that's pretty much about it.
Nice. Well, I wouldn't say that's about it. I mean, you also are a artist.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Kind of. It's one of those things where I wish I could say it's a real job. You know, it's not one of those that's going to pay the bills, but for sure it does. It helps out a lot with, I guess, like side gigs. But to add on to that, yes, I do Cerakote professionally as a dealer as well. I do it for a lot of people, actually. It first started locally and then became regionally. Now I got people from all over the U.S. Sending me stuff. You know, mainly I cater to the precision rifle world, obviously, because I'm in it, so I know certain things, what to do, tolerances, what works better, what doesn't work better, stuff like that. But I do chassis, barrels, actions, all kinds of stuff. I'm not a big fan on Cerakoting scopes. I will do it, but I just think it ruins the naturality of a scope itself. I just do like the way scopes do come from the factory. Certain things look better from the factory, and then certain things you can add your own twist to it. But, you know, I do that as well, and then obviously, I also own a Rifle Coalition, trademarked as well. So I do have a couple things under my belt that helps me live the lifestyle I have. Yeah.
Nice. So I guess let's start back with, you know, back to 2000, I think you said 16 with Competition Dynamics. I started with the CD guys back in like the 14, so just a little bit before you. And
right.
CD is, in my book, in my opinion, they are one of the best field style matches in the country, if not, I mean, in the world. They do a phenomenal job at all of their matches, their format, their locations, so on and so forth. What got you into shooting CD and field matches?
Well, I mean, even from early days in the military, I used to just go out and just shoot, you know, I was very, I mean, with a, you know, like standard carbine, stuff like that, everything was normal, but I got really intrigued into long distance and I used to go out and just shoot. I used to have a Land Cruiser, an 80 series Land Cruiser. I used to just lower the tailgate and just shoot out the back of it into a field. I'd drive out there, drop a piece of steel and eventually, you know, became a hobby to where I have a good buddy of mine, Clay and Ben and Ty and all these guys here that I live with. They were like, hey, you need to shoot the Steel Safari. And I just jumped on it one day and I never looked back. And I mean, you're right. Zach and Jimmy put on the best field match that can be out there. It's super hard. I will say this. It was very difficult, very eye-opener. You know, his targets weren't as big. They weren't as forgiving. There were diamonds, you know, piano keys, squares, tiny stuff, you know. You know, 3x3, 6x6s was your average size of a target. You know, I was. And then when I came into the NRL Hunter and I was like, oh man, this target's 12 inches wide. I was like, oh man, that's pretty awesome. No, for sure. I highly recommend the Steel Safari this year that's coming up. It might be its last year. Who knows? But it's just one of those matches where it's like, it's so awesome. And the people that put it on are They make it so amazing. I mean, CD wouldn't be the way it is without Zach and Jimmy. So.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in all honesty, I wouldn't be where I am without Zach and Jimmy. I mean, they were the first people that I really started doing the filming with and the media side of Precision Rifle World with, and they kind of got me into everything as well. So yeah, kudos to them. And if you guys, so CD is a Competition Dynamics. It's a competition-dynamics.com, I believe, is their website.
Yep.
And you need to check them out. They're field style matches, but they are more tactically inclined than what the NRL Hunter, where the NRL Hunter is based around hunting four-legged animal scenarios. Competition Dynamics is more a competition for the tactical in mind, or the, I don't know if I'd say necessarily military in mind, but the people that like to be a little bit more tactical than animal, if that makes sense. Is that, would that be a fair assessment, Justin?
I do see military go out there from time to time, not as much as you would think, but yeah, it's for sure the targets are a lot more harder to find than they are to an NRL Hunter match. 100%. They make them hard to find. Like they put them in front of a mesquite bush, they just blend in, and it's just, yeah.
And they have like some of their matches are unlimited round counts, and there's a lot more with pistol and carbine involved than just a long rifle. So it's really a well-rounded marksmanship skill set where it's pistol, carbine, long gun, and seek and destroy.
Yeah, so you have your Steel Safari, which is in June. That match is strictly a bolt and carbine gun. For bolt, it's a one shot per target, no re-engagement. So if you miss, you have to do the math in your head on how that bullet hit, for wind or was it low, and then move on to the next target. So it's usually a 1x6 or a 2x3, one target or one round per target. And then for a carbine, yes, that is unlimited. So you go out there, and it's—I believe there's a category of—it's a 22 caliber category. So it's 223 and a Valkyrie, I believe. I'm not sure entirely how true that is, but for the carbine, pretty much it's unlimited rounds per target. So if you miss, you can just burn it down. I've seen Chris Wade go out there with a carbine, and he's like not hitting nothing, and he just burns that stage down with 30 rounds, and he's like, man, I don't know where he went. I was like, everywhere but the target. He's like, well, I can slap some rounds on a target, and it's pretty crazy. But it's super fun. Super fun.
No, yeah, they're great matches. And for those of you that shoot a lot of carbine and want something harder to experience, the CD is definitely the way to go. And it's really cool because Zach and Jimmy, we have a great relationship, and so we're going to be teaming up here in August, August 3rd through 6th, and we're doing the Savage Backcountry Extreme Hunter match, which is a team match that CD is going to be doing the match directing and course of fire, and it's a 3-day backcountry match, which is going to be a lot of fun, but with NRL Hunter style shooting and rules. So it's going to be kind of a marriage of the two, and I'm really excited to see all of that come to fruition.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how that goes. I'm kind of curious to see how many people are going to show up thinking something else, and they're going to be like, man, this was just kicking the gut. So we'll see.
Well, backcountry hunting is kind of a kick in the gut. There's so many people out there that, in their heads they can do it, right? It's I can hike 10 miles, or I can go, into the depths of whatever and drag a big animal out and whatever. But when you actually get to doing it, it's not as easy as most people think. So.
Yeah. No, I will say this though, hiking up mountains you for sure take for granted. I mean, I'm in pretty good shape, but there's times where I've even at like NRL Hunter matches, and I'm like, for instance, the Idaho match, that last stage down on the bottom, you have to like hike all the way back up. And man, that just hiking up that was a kick in the gut, and I was like, man, it was pretty rough. And it was just walking up with gear. That's it.
Yep, it's, I
Just...
mean, it's something that you definitely have to prepare for.
For sure.
So, speaking of preparedness, I know that you just said that you're pretty good shape. You're a very active guy, in my opinion, compared to a lot of people. I know you're definitely more active than I am physically. Is there like a routine, or what do you do to stay in shape for field style matches? Because these aren't necessarily the most physical demanding type of competitions, but they're not necessarily a walk in the park either.
No, I will say this starting off, to shoot the NRL 100, you do not have to be in really good shape. You could do, I want to say the bare minimum, because that's a lie. I mean, I've seen some guys that, I mean, I'm not gonna call them out by name, but I know some guys that, I mean, they just go on about life, drinking beer and, eating wings, and they just like show up and they'll burn a stage down, they'll burn the whole match down, and they'll win it too. And I'm just like, man, it's like, so it shows that you don't have to be in really good shape. As long as you have that mindset where I'm not gonna quit it, or I just gotta push through this, like it's just like a normal day, you can do it. But for me, the way I see it personally, it's one of those factors that you can eliminate, as in like physical fatigue, by just, just by working out, small things, to where, say, you got to hike up something and just get to the next stage, and just that alone kind of puts you out of breath and you're tired and winded. And now your stage starts and you're up and you go there and you're still winded. That's one of those factors you can eliminate just by simply working out, or just doing simple aerobics, or just walking, just in walking in general, down the road, or, take a small run, stuff like that. I think it helps out greatly, because it's just one of those factors that you can eliminate
Yeah.
by simply working out. Now you can focus strictly on a marksmanship perspective, instead of having your high breathing, being out of breath, unable to concentrate on the target, or eye fatigue. I've seen that. Just being fatigued can kind of put some stress on the eyes, and you're not, the target could be right in front of you, and just because your eyes are fatigued, you may overlook it and just overthink it and just not see it. So simple things like that, in my perspective, being in somewhat of some shape can help eliminate part of that process.
No, absolutely. So you brought up a good point. The physical fatigue can affect your, obviously your mental, but your vision as well. Is there a like a pro tip, or what is your process, so to speak, of finding targets coming from CD, where they're like super, super difficult to find, to an NRL hunter where they can be hard to find, but they're generally easier to find, but still can be hidden a little bit? Is there a process that you go through to help find targets out in the field?
So what I do, when I'm walking up to the stage, I'll walk up, and then as soon as they say go, I pretty much begin with like the brief 2 seconds. I'll scan with my eyes, kind of get like a broad view of what the area looks like, and then kind of see, patterns in the field, like gaps between trees or a big tree. Normally, something I would do, I was like, okay, if I see like a big tree, I would put a target in front of that. So I would give like a general overlook of the layout with just kind of open eyes. And then once I get on glass, I kind of scan from near to far. So I'll scan up, and then I'll go up and then scan left to right. But normally, if I find a target within my binos, 60 to 70% of the time, the other target is within the same field of view of the binos. Like, I can still hold one target in a portion of the binos. The second target will normally be there in that general area. So kind of like in a circle motion, I'll scan. And that usually helps for me. I don't, but I can't, because there was at the Utah match where I did mess up, and I did that, and I scanned near to far, and I didn't scan far enough, and the target was way beyond what I was thinking. And it's kind of bit me in the ass sometimes, but for the most part, it works out pretty well.
Nice. So what type of, what binos or what optics setup do you use?
Right now, I'm currently running the 10Ks, 10K SIGs. They're kind of they I love the laser in them. Unfortunately, I don't love the blue tint. I know that sounds bad, but I mean, it is what it is. It's a product. There, if it's a clear sunny day, I have no issues. I can find all the targets, but once any overcast or any clouds or storm or anything that's just going to dim the day, it's like being in an episode of Batman. I just can't see anything. It's pretty bad.
So, no, I get it, bro. And the 10Ks, I think, are a phenomenal product. And I know that a lot of people, you're not the only one, a lot of people really don't like that blue tint. And SIG actually just, have you seen the new 6Ks?
Yeah, I saw Michael with his at the Mason Valley match, and I kind of played with his a little bit. I haven't bought a set yet, but I did play with them, and there was a lot better. It was like almost 3K glass with a little bit better HD quality, and a better laser. So it's pretty
Yeah.
awesome.
So it's definitely it, like I got a pair here. So you're going to the Utah match. If you want to borrow them, they're all yours to use, bro. But the 6Ks, like I used the 10Ks for hunting all last season. And you know, during the early light or the last light, there was definitely some eye fatigue there trying to strain through and see what you could possibly see. But I'm super excited about the 6Ks because, like you said, it's got that clear clear glass. It's a little bit, it's actually a lot easier to see through in the lower light conditions, but it's got that same laser as the 10K. But it's the only situation here is that it is it's using the AB light right now, so it only ranges out to 800 yards. So that's the big compromise between the 6K and the 10Ks right now, but they're doing that because the 6Ks are going to be a lot more affordable than the 10Ks. So, you know, price is going to determine features as well, right? But in a hunting situation, I don't shoot, I try not to shoot anything past, you know, that 550 yard mark anyways. So for me, 800 yards is more than enough in a hunting situation. In an NRL hunter match, you know, we don't have targets that are past 1,000 yards. So you have a 200 yard gap that you're gonna have to figure out how to manage if you're using that 6K.
Well, that shouldn't be an issue for me. I've never ran digital data. I've always, even with the 10Ks, I don't use it nothing but for a laser. I don't even use the ballistic engine in there. I mean, what's awesome about the 10Ks is I was able to tweak the laser to shoot perfectly on the reticle. That was super awesome. You know, that's
Yeah, that's
gonna be
huge.
different when I switch to the 6Ks. But other than that, I just use them strictly for a laser to range, and then all my data is on a hard data sheet on my arm.
Okay, so that's an interesting topic because there's a lot of conversation on, especially for the newer guys, on preferences of how to run data. So do you run an arm board and you have your data pre-written out that the night before, or how do you do that?
So the way it works for me is I'll show up. So say I'll show up to an NRL Hunter match, and I'll show up Friday, kind of get like a broad, you know, broad view of what the match is going to look like, or temperature wise, sorry. And then I'll kind of go through my phone and see what the temperature is like for the next 2 days, and I'll kind of get like a happy medium of what the temperature will be. So say it's, you know, we start the match obviously like around 8 o'clock, and 8 o'clock it's going to be 60 degrees. And then by the time we hit noon, it's going to be, you know, 90 degrees. So then I'll put my data more or less like around 80 degrees. And just depending on what the temperature is going to change. So I'll put my data in my Kestrel at 80 degrees. And then I'll kind of do that for both days and just see how much of a difference my dope changes between, you know, 60 to 90 degrees between all that. And that's when I'll place my happy medium and my dope. And I just write it all out. Everything's written out the night prior, but I'll have like blank cards out to 1,000. You know, I'll have a blank card out to 1,000. So I'll have three rows, you know, 200, 600, and then 800 up to 1,000. And then I'll have like a blank sheet, or not like a blank sheet, like a blank space on my left hand side to where I write my targets out like a map. So my biggest issue is I'll get confused where targets are at. I know some guys will write one, like target 1, 1.5, target 2, 2.3.
Yeah.
And that works for some people. You know, this obviously, unfortunately, it doesn't work for me. So I'll have to write out in a map type perspective where my targets are at, so that way I don't jump targets or overlook targets as going to line or whatever, you know, the layout is for that stage.
So you're physically on the clock. I mean, obviously you have to be on the clock to do it, but you're drawing a field map.
Yes, I just write out, I don't
Wow.
draw out the target, I just write out the range. So, but yes, like how you're saying, it is correct. I'll write 235, and then in the same layout, the way the mat, the same layout, the way the stage is, I'll write out the next target, you know, 387. But I'll do it like if it's an upside down triangle
Right.
stage, or if it's a target turn a line, I'll do it just exactly the way it is. That way I follow that. And also for me, it kind of doesn't let me get too far ahead of myself and rush. So I'll kind of take a breather. So I'll be like, I'm shooting and I'll be 235. Okay. And I'll look over and I repeat the data to myself out loud, or else I won't remember it. So I'll say 2 point, you know, 235 yards. You know, that's 0.4, 0.2. So my 0.4 is my elevation. My 0.2 is my 10 mile an hour wind hold. I always do 10. It's easier to cut and add 10 than it is to do anything else. I've seen guys that write out a 5 mile an hour wind and a 10, you know. So I just write out 10. Five obviously is going to be a 0.1, so it's not hard to do. So I'll do
Yes,
that. And then I'll go on to the next target and I'll be 435. Take a breather, read my dope out to myself, and then I'll get on the gun, stuff like that. Kind of helps me go in the process and not moving too fast.
right.
That's what works for me. But I know some guys that will do the one target, 1.3, 2, 2.5, stuff like that. And it works well for them. You know, I
Yeah.
know really good shooters that do that, and you know, they kill it.
So that's cool, because I never thought about the process that you just described, because I'm one of those guys that I just, if it's a four target stage, I write 1, 2, 3, 4, and then I just write down my dope. I don't write down yardage. I don't write down any of that. And I've always done it that way because I assumed that it was faster, but maybe it's not, because then I don't necessarily remember where that, second, third, and fourth target are. So it's an interesting concept that you're actually drawing it out based upon the direction or the style that the targets are set up. So that's pretty cool. I've never seen that.
Yes, that's what I found that works well for me. I mean, I know some guys that do, you know, that live by it, like Colin. Colin lives by digital data. It's like, oh man, check out this like $4,000 Garmin watch that I got. Like, you know, it tells me when to wipe my ass. And I'm like, dude, I don't know if that's an org. Like, Colin crushes it. He kills stages and he kills matches, so
He
it
does.
works really well for him.
He does. So when you're writing out your data card, I know that there's some people that do 10-yard increments and 25-yard increments. What is, and some do more, but what is your increment that you're writing out to 1,000 yards, I think you said?
Mine is going to be 10 yards. I wish I could tell you mine's every 25 yards, but my OCD would not allow me to do that. I would freak out. Like, if I did every 25 yards and there was a yardage at, you know, let's say, you know, 418, and I was like, all right, well, let me see. I'll just put in like something for four, and I start guessing and I miss, it will just eat me up. I'd rather do 10 yards than knowing. I was like, all right, cool. So I know it's really small to read, but I got pretty good eyes. So I can read and write really small. So I'll see that and I'll be like, all right, 280. Or so be like 280 or 483. I'll put in dope for 480 and I'll
Right.
go with that. But yeah, mine's every 10 yards.
Okay. And then you're just using a arm board or whatever on there, and that flap up and whatnot.
Off Amazon, yeah. It was like $9, $8, $9. I think it's called a Champ Pro. It's pretty
Right.
big. It's a pretty big arm board. I'm a big believer in laminating my dope carts. I have to.
So I actually, I just bought, because I use an arm board as well, like when I go hunting and stuff, which I know it's not traditional hunting, but it's what we are accustomed to. So I actually just bought Right in the Rain makes, I know we're on video, they won't see this, but they make 3.5 by 5 index cards that are Right in the Rain. So I just bought these to try to use them, so I don't have to laminate and I don't have to do all the extra steps. So I'm try that out this season.
So the two reasons the reason why I laminate is it helps out on obviously moisture. I don't destroy, because when I went to Dorgan's match, I mean obviously we're talking like 2 feet of snow at his match,
Yeah.
and you know, the moisture just kind of ate up my dope card, and for reasons like that. And also when you laminate them, it kind of makes a harder writing surface. It's more flat, so it's a smoother writing surface, and that's the reason why I mainly do that. It's just pretty much sticking like a card in your arm board and you're good to go.
Nice. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense for sure. All right, so you've got your firing solutions, you figured out your data and so on and so forth. You're using the SIGs to glass. So what other, so this was a question, and I probably should do a video on this. We got a question from a new guy just last week asking what are the necessary, or what is the necessary gear that you need to bring to an NRL hunter match. So I have an idea, but I'm curious to see what you think.
So I saw that post. I meant to reply to it, but I didn't want to chime in, come off as one of those guys that feels like they know everything.
Right.
So I just kind of sat back and see what everyone saw. But for me, when I first started, to compare what I use now, I carry a lot less gear than I did when I first started. When I first started shooting, my personal opinion, I recommend it's better to have something and not use it than not have it and need it. So like a big puff pillow, like those Stu Smith puff pillows. I recommend carrying one of those. If you're not real, really good with a tripod, you can have it as a rear bag, as a puff pillow to stabilize. Or someone that just wants to get elevated that's not carrying a sky pod, they can use that puff pillow as well. Just carry multiple bags. They make light filled bags that can work out really well. But for right now, all I carry is just a backpack and just a rear bag.
Your backpack, your rear bag, you have your tripod.
Yep, so backpack, rear bag, tripod, and rifle. That's it. And binos. I'm a very minimalistic gear type of guy right now. Like I have a really small bag. That's it's the Is it the Kefaru? I think so. I think it's the Kefaru 1500 divide. It's pretty small.
Yeah. Oh, you're using a 15, so you're using a day pack. You're not even using a full backpack.
No, it's tiny.
Okay,
Super tiny.
wow. So what, okay, so the 1500, you're using a rear bag, are you using like a game changer, or what rear bag are you using?
I'm using a bag from it's a Brian Whalen's bag. It's pretty much like a wide bag,
Yeah.
like a little cylinder.
Okay.
A little cylinder bag with a get light fill in it. That's pretty much about it.
Nice. Brian, if you guys don't know, Brian Whalen's like, he does precision rifle classes in Colorado and New Mexico. He's an awesome guy to look up for classes and education if you guys are looking for somebody to learn from. Stand up dude, and he knows his shit. So shout out to Brian. Backpack, you're saying that a 1500, the Kefaru or whatever 1500 pack that fits you best. What tripod are you using?
Right now I run the QDT, the B2 with a Anvil 30 head. I used to run
That two
like
guys.
straight up, the two vets
Yeah, okay.
QDT with the Anvil 30. Before I used to run like a straight up TFC 30 TFC T33 from Really Right Stuff, the three leg tripod.
Right.
And, it's crazy, the QDT really, it really helps out a lot. It works wonders. It's so stable. It's crazy. Like I see a 600 yard shot and it's off tripod. I'm like, I don't even sweat it. I'm just like, okay, I clip in and just hold and I'm good to go. This is a good like standing tripod. 90% chance I'll hit my target, standing tripod with that. Or kneeling, it's pretty much it's going down.
Nice. Okay, so hold on. So this has been, I don't know if I'd call it a debate, but a good topic of conversation we'll segue into real quick. You just said that you clip into your tripod.
I do, yes.
Okay, why do you, so I don't. I shoot off of a plate in a bag. Why do you clip in?
I don't know. It's just I don't really see. This is again my personal opinion. I don't see a bag on. I don't see a bag on top of a tripod really too stable. I know, like I said, other people have different opinions. So be it. But for me, it doesn't really work as to where, a tripod and clipping in, I can shoot, clip in, shoot. I'm pretty stable. And then if I gotta let go, say I gotta let go of my rifle and I didn't range something right, I can just pick my binos off the floor or off my little clip that I have off from from Sky, and I just range with my binos real quick. My rifle's still clipped in, I can just drop my binos real quick and I don't have to pick my rifle back up. It's already there. But
Right.
personally I find it really stable to clip in. That's just me. I find that fulcrum on that rifle, I clip in and just go straight into town.
Nice. Okay. So I've shot both ways, and I don't think that there's a one way necessarily that's right or wrong. I started shooting off of a plate and a bag purely for speed.
And I think it is. It comes off from a purist standpoint. I think that's a very, again, they're probably gonna get some hatred for that. But riding a bag is a very purist thing to do.
Yeah.
It's all about speed. If you can balance out your rifle to where, like, you have a nice fulcrum off a bag, like if you can stick your rifle on a bag on a tripod and then just let go, then you're good to go. You have that fulcrum. You don't need to clip in.
Yeah, so maybe, and obviously you shoot more than I shoot, right? I mean, I go to more matches than probably anybody in the
Probably
country.
go
I shoot less than most people, which kind of sucks, but I'm always trying to learn from people that are better than me. I mean, if I was out there and I wasn't learning something, I'd be pretty dumb, waste of time, right? So I always like to find what and why people do things. Maybe I'm fairly confident shooting off of a tripod. But maybe if I slow down and take the time to flip in, maybe I'll be even more confident. So maybe it's something I try next.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say shooting. I mean, either way, off a bag or clipped in, shooting off a tripod's not really. You're not gonna have a lot of recoil management. It's just there to get on target and then kind of see where you shot. Because even with me, I could stay within the glass, but it's not nowhere near if I was shooting prone or kneeling tripod, stuff like that. It's just you're gonna shoot and you're gonna lose kind of track of where that rifle's going, and then. But it's pretty, once to get on target, it's pretty stable. It's pretty stable.
Nice. Okay, so what rifle platform are you using? Because I mean, I know what you're using, but let's talk about it because it's not a system that you see a lot of in NRL Hunter.
No, it's not. Definitely not a lot of, I get a lot of questions about that too. So I shoot, shout out to Adam Burt. I shoot the JP APAC from JP Enterprises. It's a bolt gun platform. In short action, I don't believe they make a long action for it, but it's really nice. The reason I love it so much is it's this boulder is so stable. The rear support's really awesome. I do love the knurling on the on the chassis. I just like the way it looks in general, and it performs really well. I know I don't get really a lot of problems with it. I mean, I treat it like shit. I run it into the ground, and it's held up for a very long time. My own two chassis from them, and then right now for the NRL Hunter up in Utah, I'm gonna run a Manners long range hunter, so I'll go into the light
You
division.
know, you're gonna be switching it up for Utah then.
Yes, so that's gonna be we're gonna see how that goes because I've been shooting at the range with it for a little bit, and it's a lot different than shooting off a chassis platform.
It is. It the ergonomics of it and the impulse, the recoil impulse or the recoil is different. The way that your body sits to it's different. It's unique. For sure
Yeah.
to go back and forth, right? Most guys stick to one style and that's what they master. So when I see guys switching it up all the time, it's always interesting to see how they perform. And some guys do great and some guys are obviously better with one style than the other.
Oh, for sure. It shouldn't be too much of a difference. It's just different ways of going about things, like certain ways to set up is my biggest thing. So pretty much I'll be consuming more time on how I'm going to set this rifle up compared to just, the muscle memory I have from a chassis system. That's the biggest thing that I'm going to take away from that is the muscle memory and getting things started.
Nice. Okay, so what optic are you running?
So right now, I run the ZCO 5x27 in a Impact 3 reticle. Right now, I'm trying to get that new Impact 2X.
I don't know anything about it. Well, tell me about it.
So it's a really good scope. Very clear, pretty high dollar, unfortunately, but it works really well. It tracks really well. The coating on it is amazing. Called for me being a coating specialist. I love the coating on it. It's very durable. My scope looks pretty beaten to the ground already, and I haven't had it that long compared to a lot of the guys. But it still holds up pretty well. The Impact 3 reticle. It's kind of your 2.4. Your 2.4. Half, six, eight tenths reticle, and then you got your mil dot for your 1 mil, and it does it so on to every mil, but it's super easy. So I hold for wind, I dial elevation and hold for wind. So,
Right.
doing that math really quick with those with those tenths holds up really well. It's just so easy. The 2.4 and then half is just so easy to cut and add.
Nice. Okay, awesome. So, what caliber are you shooting?
6.5 and average. I shoot the 140 grain ELDMs with Lapua brass, and I normally with 4350. I normally push them between 28-30, so not too fast, but it's where I find that node that shoots really well for me.
And you're reloading, obviously, then.
Reload, yeah. And before in the beginning, I used to reload like religiously to where I needed my SDs below 5 or 3, something super tight. And now, I've won matches where I've shot an SD of 15, 16. And so if I can get my SD in single digits, I roll. I call it a day. If it groups well and my SDs are in a single digit, I call it a day and roll out the door.
Nice.
So
Cool. No,
it's
that's
not that, to me, it's not that big of a deal. don't see much of a difference. I mean, Chris Waite put out a podcast where he's, I think he said like an SD of 100, and he still was hitting targets out to 1,000 yards, something like that.
I'll have to find that. I haven't listened to that podcast yet.
Yeah, it's like it's either an SD of 50 or SD of 100, but it was just he mixed up a bunch of lots of match ammo and just went to town. He was still, you know, hitting targets out to 1,000 yards. And so
Chris is a unique guy. He's awesome, right? He's a good friend. He is like a mad scientist when it comes to precision rifle. He's like always trying to figure out something different and try something new. And that's, I guess, one of the great things about him, right?
yeah, I love how blatantly honest he is. He's very blunt. Bluntly, is it
Yes.
blatantly honest? Blatantly honest he is. Like, he just tells you straight up. There's no sugarcoating it. There's no beating around the bush. And I know some people will take it well and some others don't, but I love it. But for me, it's like, hey, you're gonna die? Like, yeah, you're gonna die. Like, all right, cool. So now I know what I'm dealing with. So, you know, I do love that. I love that about him a lot.
No, absolutely. I mean, he's so his first match was a CD match. And then he came out and shot an NRL Hunter match. And that first Hunter match that he shot, he actually borrowed. He took advantage of our loaner rifle program. So he actually borrowed one of our rifles. He actually shot very well. I had no idea who he was. But I was helping him out, you know, get everything, you know, fit to him and so on and so forth. And that was a few years ago. And to see where he was to where he is now, I mean, he has grown so fast and developed a very unique system for the way that he shoots. It's pretty damn incredible.
Yes, it's very technical. I love how he breaks it down. Like, he, I wouldn't say, I don't believe the word overthinking is the correct term. Because I feel like when you overthink things, you kind of go into a negative effect. But he breaks it down so much to where he analyzes each perspective of what he did or what he did wrong to help improve himself at the next stage.
Yeah, he's very analytical,
Yes, very.
right? So yeah, he's a great guy to learn from, to watch. He's very passionate about what he does, so it's pretty awesome.
Yes, another person that's up and coming for sure that is very quite impressive is Cody Carroll's kid, Landon. He
Landon,
is
oh.
for beans. I might be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure he just turned 16, so he's got to shoot with the big boys. But he is the most impressive kid to shoot this sport. Like, I know we got some people out on the East Coast, you know, but the fact that there's so much more dynamics behind a field match than there is, I guess, PRS and more thinking, more factors to mess up than there is just going up to a barricade and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, that you have to do yourself. This kid just, he shoots lights out. And, it, you know, I mean, it shows volumes. I mean, he runs proof barrels. He shoots for AI and he shoots for proof and just, you know, it speaks volumes. He's a very good shooter. I'm lucky enough to get to drag him down here to Steel Safari this year. So we'll see how he does on that. You know, I'm hoping he's gonna drag some skulls for sure.
Oh,
If
absolutely.
he is better than most DoD snipers out there right now, 100%.
Well,
I'm not joking. Like, I am dead serious. Like, he is so well disciplined. It's crazy. The
you would know
discipline is
more about
unbelievable.
that than I would, but he is definitely like he is a champion. I
Yes,
mean,
100%.
he's a champion. If he so my fear, not my fear, my concern is when people start in this sport at a young age, because I think he started when he was like 13 or 14 or something like that, if I'm not mistaken, right? Is I don't want them to like I fear that they get burnt out, right? I mean, 16 years old, when I was a 16-year-old kid, you know, I was thinking about getting my first car and thinking about girls. So I wasn't thinking about it, you know, much else, right? School, whatever. But this kid is so disciplined. From all of the time that I've seen him at matches and hung out with him and his dad, and his skill set behind a rifle is something that you don't see very often. So I hope that he sticks with this sport and that, I mean, his dad is a very well respected gentleman in the military community, and hopefully, you know, if he goes that route, he'll be able to put his skill set to use.
Yeah, I think he's gonna. I mean, who kid doesn't want? I mean, what father doesn't want that? You want your kid to surpass you, and I highly believe that. Well, let's be real. Landon does shoot better than his dad. I mean, I'm probably gonna get hate from his dad. He's gonna be like, "What's up, bro? What are you gonna do about me on a podcast?" And I was like, "Hey, man, I'm just speaking the truth. Your kid smokes you. He's really good."
Yeah.
But yeah, like I said, so much discipline. But when you have genetics, from your father, like Cody Carroll, it's just it trickles down. And just it's awesome.
It is. And he is technically a young gun, but he is shooting in, I think, the open heavy class or whatnot. And he is, like you said, he's skull dragging adults. And I'm not talking about just like the new shooters. I'm talking about seasoned competitors that have been doing this for longer than he has. And he's going to be one of those guys that will be a champion for sure, as long as he stays passionate about the sport.
Yeah, no, he's in a good places for sure. And I'm not sure, like I said, it's crazy that the fact that he's still in high school. I know I can't, this is so bad, but there's gonna be some people out there complaining, well, because I used to be one of those people, like, well, if I didn't have a job, I just sat at home and shot guns all day, I'd be as good too. I know, understand we have lives and jobs and families we got to take care of, but if I had the discipline Landon did, at his age, yeah, it's night and day. I don't even touch, the same. I can't even put myself in the same room or same house, as him at his age and the discipline he has and how smart he is. It's crazy.
It is. And, you know, there's always, people are always going to say what they want to say. There's going to be haters out there for everything. But the simple fact of the matter is Landon is a good young man. He's a gentleman. He's always very polite. He's very humble. He's excellent at this sport. And he's not one of those kids that's out there, you know, I mean, I don't know him on a personal home front type of level, but I don't see him as one of those kids that stuck out there on their phone all day being behind the computer and thinking that the world owes him anything. He's one of those.
No, he's very. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. He's
Oh,
very active,
yeah.
very, very active.
I mean, I think he's a good role model for the other kids around him, and hopefully that's true.
I believe so. Yeah, I really do. He's very, very respectful. So, anytime you see him out there, just say what's up to him, and he'll be like, "Oh, hey, what's up, man?" He's like, "Oh, thanks, appreciate it." He's got some sarcasm time to time, which he's done to me. I'll say something stupid, and he's like, "Wow, I didn't realize we're doing that." And I'm like, "That just makes you feel dumb." You're like, "All right, cool." This guy's got like 15-year-old. I was like, "It's fine."
But yes, but he does it, you know, he does it in the right way, right? You can be
Yeah.
sarcastic the wrong way, and you can be sarcastic with one of the boys, right? And
Yes, correct.
he's substantially younger than you and I, but he's one of us, right?
Yes, 100%.
So yeah.
That's what I want to see is it. I know there's some people in this sport that are like, "Why?" And it's so bad. I don't know why would you be like that. But there's some people in this sport that are like, "Why are you talking to me? Like, you know who I am? Like, that's not how it should be, man. Like, just welcome everyone. If someone says what's up, say hi to them, have a conversation with them. Just kind of you want to bring more people to this and not turn them down or call them stupid or make them look like shit and things like that. I mean, there's joking around and stuff like that, but don't put them in a negative aspect to where they don't want to come back. That's not the way to go about things.
Absolutely. I mean, there's like at Dorgan's match, we were doing the Hornaday Rimfire experience, and there was like 10 of us shooting, but all 10 of us were friends, like good friends, right? And that whole session was a lot of fun of talking trash to each other. But as we were talking trash to each other, because we're friends and we know that it's not, you know, we're not serious when we make fun of each other, right? It's just fun. And that stuff's okay, but with the new guy, you absolutely, you know, we want this sport to be as welcoming as possible. And that's why we like doing the get-togethers and making sure that everyone feels welcome and so on and so forth. And the people that generally try to ostracize other people, they don't usually last very long in the sport for the most part.
No, they don't. But I said, I welcome as many people as I can. At least I try to. I hope I'm not too rude to them to where they turn away. You know, I'm just joking. I'm, you know, trying to get you to get along with the gang. But, you know, the point is to bring everyone as much as we can.
No, man, I think like I think when we go to dinner, we you and I we've had dinners multiple times.
Right.
I think you're one of those guys that has those unique stories that we're like, what did he really just say that? Is that can't be real? Then it's like, no, I really did that. I'm like,
Yeah, no, I wish I could tell you. If you ever see me out and about, asking about my stories, you know, we're out on the stage or whatever, I'll tell you one of the stories that I wish I could tell you on here, but I feel like
it's
I'm
not,
still gonna pay for that. So
yeah, no. When you see or you meet Justin, these are stories that are campfire stories, not podcast stories, right?
no, 100%.
So, but I think, you know, the fact that I think you're a great ambassador for the sport. I think you're very knowledgeable about the sport. You know, we didn't really get into it a whole bunch, but we can. You know, with Red American Cerakote, you're not only a artist on that side, but you're also a sponsor of the sport. I mean, I don't know how many matches, but you've done several matches where you've done trophies and stuff.
Okay, yeah.
You know, which always come out awesome. So I think it's just badass, and that's why I wanted to have you on, you know, have you on the show here.
No, yeah, appreciate it. Kind of trying to get something big for next year, so we'll talk about it a little more later.
Absolutely. I love ideas and creating, so you know that about me, man.
For sure.
It'll be good. What else? What else do the viewers need to know? What did we not cover? What is some Justin 101?
Justin 101. All right, I got something, and I hope it doesn't go like in a wrong way. But so I obviously got hurt in the military, right? And, and this is what's crazy. Like, and it just a lot of people won't even know this. If they saw me out about, they would not even guess. But back in 2016, I was paralyzed. I got hurt in the military. Had a stroke in my spine, and it left me paralyzed from the waist down. I was paralyzed from the shoulders down for a couple days, and then from the waist down for quite a long time. You know, took me a long time to get back on the road again, get moving, stuff like that. You'd be surprised at small things we like take for granted, you know, like getting off the toilet, stuff like that, walking up a curb, driving, stuff like that. But yeah, it was crazy. kind of kicked me back a good ways, and I had to relearn everything. Unfortunately, I didn't really, speech didn't go out on me. Memory kind of did for a little bit, but speech was always there. You know, cognizance was still there. It was just more motor skills, and there was never any pain. I never felt any pain. It was just, it's like one day someone turned off the light switch, and that was it. Took me about a year, probably about 2 years, I'd say, realistically, to kind of get things going again. Long-term side effect, I got a Mr. Deeds foot. So my right leg from the thigh down, I don't feel nothing. Motor skills are still there, perfectly fine. They came back, but I don't feel from my thigh down like at all.
I didn't know that. Okay.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Like, and you'll never hear me complain about it, like, ever. Like, you will never see me like, well, this is the reason I can't do that. I will say this though, the stroke kind of did change me in a I was very what's the word I'm looking for? Extrovert. Like, I still am to a certain perspective, but I used to be all about going out or going out and doing things. And
Right.
after that happened, it was like a 180 degree turn. Because now I have to be inside. I live in a small town, not a small town, but like a small city, to where I go to all these matches and I kind of have my fun for that weekend, you know, go out and talk to people, you know, and then I come back and I kind of hermit myself in a way. I kind of not isolate myself, but I'm kind of glad to be in this small town where there's really nothing going on.
Right.
Kind of helps me reset and get on for like the next match. So that helps out tremendously. But I kind of, in a mindset point of view, I kind of have to be. I always have to tell myself I have to be the best man in the room, just because I wouldn't really say because of my disability, but it'll make me question myself. So in my mind, I'm telling myself, you got to be, if this guy can do this, you got to do it better. Even though that's not necessarily the case, I'm trying to over to beat someone or be better than someone. It's just, it's telling myself, you got to do this. Don't let it stop you, or just kind of push forward, just move on.
Right.
That's pretty much about it. I mean, and it's been what 7 years now since the accident. So that was the reason why I got separated from the military. I was about 2/3 of my career. I wish I could say I could, make it to 20 years, but unfortunately, I didn't. I guess I still work for the government. I still have my business, so everything works out well. Actually, doing really well, so I can't complain.
Yeah, I didn't like. Obviously, I knew this part about you from previous conversations and so on and so forth. I didn't know if you wanted to get into it on the podcast, but before I knew this, I would have never guessed any of that about you. You don't seem like you have any kind of disability, and I don't know if disability is the right word for if that's the fair word to use right now, because like you have overcome things that most people would just crawl up and hide from.
Yeah, no, straight
And
up.
that's freaking awesome, bro. I mean, I commend you, because I know a lot of vets that have been injured. I used to do a lot of stuff with a lot of vet charities and stuff like that, and I know guys that overcome it, and I know a lot of guys that don't. So the fact that you're out there, you're married, you have a successful business, you have a job, you compete, you have friends all over the country, and you're getting out there and you're doing it, I think it's badass. It's a story that people who say I can't do something because of XYZ, I think it's good for people to know that if you push to overcome whatever you perceive to be a disability, you can do and live a healthy, a happy, healthy life.
Yeah, I mean, to my standpoint of life is right now, that's just how I feel. It's just I have to be, there are things can be a lot worse. That's the way I see it.
Yeah,
So,
absolutely.
and also, the reason I stay so active is because the docs did tell me that if I stop using it, I will lose it. It's just one of those things. Like,
Oh,
if I,
yeah.
yeah. So, that's the reason why I'm always running or doing something very active. I still work out every day, stuff like that. It's just if I don't, it's those motor skills that if I stop using, they will get lost. Just like any other, even with like shooting,
Yeah.
muscle memory, if you stop shooting for so long, you forget that rhythm. The same thing.
Right. No, that's well, I did not know that part, but I mean, I was going to say that goes back to like the beginning of our show where we were talking about you being physical and so on and so forth. I mean, you are no shit in better physical condition than I am, and a lot of people that I mean, the fact that Dorgan, I mean, let's just call it what it is. Dorgan can go out and drink all night. And he's one of those guys that has a beer gut and he can shoot very well. And he doesn't probably exercise very much, but there's other guys that are physically good shape that do compete on a high level as well.
Yeah, no, I actually recently just saw Dorgan out at that Legion match in Kentucky. That was a very interesting match. It was pretty fun.
Nice.
Yeah,
Nice.
they were out there, and I was like, "Oh, what are you doing out here?" And I was like, "Can't even get you to go to a match 4 hours away, but you're at a match, halfway across the country." He's like, "Oh yeah, man, it's whatever."
Dorgan is an anomaly. He's a great
Yeah.
guy. But him and his kids are freaking awesome. His whole family's freaking awesome. But yeah, it's good stuff, man. But I'm super glad to have you a part of the NRL community, the hunter community. The fact that you've persevered through so much, and I think you're a great ambassador, like I said, for the sport, and you do great things. I think it's badass, and obviously whatever we can do to support you and the business and whatnot, we're here for you, bro.
I appreciate it. I think like the most important thing is just friends supporting friends. That's the big takeaway from this,
Yeah,
no matter what.
absolutely. Is there any last words you want for the audience, or we'll parlay into the next one.
Now, like I said, best thing you can do is always support your friends no matter what. Whether it's a company, whether it's a small business, or whether it's just a shooter himself, it's not how good you are, it's what you represent is the big thing.
Yeah, it's better to be a great person than anything else, right?
Yeah, you can be an average shooter, but a great, great person to speak with, or it's better to be that than a great shooter than just someone you just can't deal with. So, like I
Right.
said, big thing is always support your friends.
Absolutely. Great words of advice. All right, guys, on that note, we are going to wrap up this show. Justin, man, thank you so much for being here today, imparting some wisdom on us, sharing your story. I think it's absolutely inspiring and fantastic. For all of you guys that are out there listening, Again, nrlhunter.org. Come check us out. We'll be out there hanging out. But until then, you guys stay safe, keep shooting. We'll see you all at the match. Take care.